Hello and welcome to our first update episode of the 2021-22 season here on the History of Youth Side Football podcast. Just to let you know in terms of what's going on in the region during the season. Obviously, there's been a few events, so I thought I wanted to have this firstly after the European qualifiers were up, both for the World Cup and for club competitions. So first of all, just one bit of news. As you may notice, any references to my Twitter account on this podcast previously have been to an account that now no longer exists. So if you do wish to contact me on there, it's HYFPRW. So if you need me to do that phonetically, History Yugoslav Football Podcast Richard Wilson. So I've gone for a fairly obvious new acronym on there on Twitter. It will be a little bit quieter than usual just because of certain circumstances that I'm not going to bother getting into on here. But we'll plow into, first of all, the national team stuff, and then we'll go on to a bit of club football as we go. So starting off with the hopes of the nations, there are... See one group with two sides in, which is the UEFA Group H, which features both Croatia and Slovenia. Slovenia first had a very poor international break, coming out of it with 4 points, a draw, home draw against Slovakia, home win, 1-0 over Malta, but then a 3-0 loss to Croatia in Split, where they were absolutely outclassed. And I think what we've seen very much is that Slovenia have quite a big problem from an attacking sense. You know, so far, six games into the group, they scored four times. And that isn't going to get you through. Quite aside from that, it certainly isn't even going to get you into a playoff, particularly not with Croatia now looking nigh uncertain to qualify. And Russia, while Russia, you know, in my own estimation, aren't a particularly strong side, you know, Slovenia now have a 6-point gap to them, and that probably isn't going to be something that's really surmountable with the four games remaining. Now, Slovenia's four games they have left is Malta away, Slovenia at home, Slovakia away, and then finishing up with Cyprus at home. Four games that range from challenging to outright difficult. I think certainly the match in Slovakia of the four is probably going to be the most challenging, given it comes in the as the penultimate game of the group, when Slovakia presumably will need to win if they want to actually qualify for Qatar. There has been open discussion around the future of Slovenian manager Matija Kek, which is probably justified because of his reluctance to move away from a sort of 4-3-3/4-2-3-1, which doesn't really suit the players he's got at his disposal. In particular, I think this international break has sort of showed up the limitations of Josip Iličić. But you know, more than anything, it's sort of shown up the lack of depth Slovenia have in striking positions. You know, the four strikers that were called up this time. You have Zavic, Sporar, Sesko, and Mlakar. And you have Zavic and Mlakar are two quite similar penalty box strikers. Sporar likes being out on the right. Sesko is obviously a bit of an unknown because he's only 18, but you know, he's only 18. You know, you have to be reasonable with your expectations of him. So Slovenia, a little bit, maybe not in crisis, certainly in a situation where they're going sort of alternating in their expectations between whether they should be third in the group or fourth in the group. Certainly as things stand, I don't think there's really any realistic hope that they'll be challenging for the actual qualification on the playoff spot. For Croatia, three games, unbeaten. See, aside from beating Slovenia 3-0, win away in Slovakia 1-0, and a draw away in Russia. Very good break for them, has to be said. even if I think the Slovenia result has probably put a bit of a gloss on it, the performances against Russia and particularly Slovakia weren't great. Obviously, this was an international break where they were without Luka Modric for fitness reasons, and you could tell. And it really took until that last game, you know, where they were able to bring in Marco Levia, put him sort of in the middle, for them to actually get any real attacking fluency together. They do still have issues with certain players. I think, you know, we're still sort of wondering, you know, 50-odd caps in, what exactly Andrej Kramaric's best role for Croatia is, because we've never really seen the form that justifies him being the, you know, absolutely fantastic player that he is at club level. But, you know, the outcome of the group for Croatia now is reasonably certain. You know, they've got Cyprus away next, then Slovakia at home, then Malta away, before you go to the final day of hosting Russia. You know, realistically, you would think that Croatia are going to go into that final game having 1-3 on the bounce. It would be a surprise if they weren't to. Russia, meanwhile, have to host Slovakia and go to Russia. They obviously, Russia have to go to Russia, but they also have to go to Slovenia. So, you know, that's where that gap is. That's where that gap can come. Because if Russia aren't able to get 6 points from those two games in the October international break, you would think then Croatia will have a little bit of daylight at the top of the group. And the result will be that Croatia should qualify with ease. Speaking of teams that probably should have qualified with ease, Serbia have had a very interesting international break. On one positive, you know, they beat Luxembourg 4-1 before drawing with Ireland. In both, they put out nice attacking formations, they played fluently, you know, they looked good. Really, against Ireland, they should have gotten all 3 points. They probably should have put more than one past them, particularly, you know, when you sort of consider how poor Ireland have been. You know, you're playing in Dublin and you have nearly 60% possession and you have, you know, five times the shots on target that the home side do. You know, you really should be getting 3 points out of that. It makes things a bit more difficult, but at the same time, doesn't necessarily change the maths of the group. For Serbia to qualify automatically, they were always going to have to get a result against Portugal on the final day. That is obviously difficult. The dropping of 2 points against Ireland basically means that it means Serbia have to beat Portugal on the final day. But you know, it's now 5 points back to Luxembourg and should be reasonably comfortable to expect that Serbia will be taking up the playoff spot. And of course, there were even more goals for Mitro during the international break. Ronaldo, I'm sure, will be looking over his shoulder because Mitro is definitely on to get, you know, maybe that sort of 70, 80 international goals in the time he's got left in his career. And possibly even more, depending on how Serbia do, you know, get into major tournaments and putting in a couple of goals there. You know, we could see Mitrovic possibly get to 100 goals if he is able to stay fit, you know, and in the team till, you know, he hits 34, 35. As for the other sides, we'll touch next on North Macedonia, who have seen Group J become tight. Obviously, they have had weird results so far. But if we talk about this international break, there was a home draw against Armenia. Armenia are a good side. A away draw against Iceland, where now, you know, obviously on the face of it, that's a good result, but not so much when you consider that with 12 minutes to go, Macedonia was still 2-0 up. You know, that it was 2 points thrown away, followed by a impressive 0-0 draw against Romania, which Macedonians were the better side, But, you know, Romania are obviously, I think as everyone knows and recognises, a pretty good team. And for Macedonia to be getting a point from them is, you know, still something that's worthy of note. They have Liechtenstein next, which would be a nice 3 points for them, followed by hosting Germany, which, you know, obviously on recent form should be a nice 3 points for Macedonia as well. They round off with a trip to Armenia and hosting Iceland. It's not unimaginable that they get 7 points from their remaining four games. That will put them on 16 points. For Armenia and Romania, who are the other two sides in playoff contention, that means they more or less have to be getting 6 points from their last four games to be insured of qualification. There's no guarantees of that, of course. So North Macedonia aren't out of contention. They certainly have a very good chance of getting the playoff spot in Group J, but yeah, it's probably fair to say they need to be getting, I'd say, at least 7 points from their final four games, if not nine, which would mean basically winning all three games except the Germany one. In terms of the other three sides in the World Cup Euro groups, we'll just go from in group order. We have Kosovo in Group B. Amassed 4 points from their five games. They renewed their controversial rivalry with Spain over the international break. Their results weren't bad. You know, all 4 points in the group have come from these three games. You know, a win away in Georgia. As a Scotsman, I feel duty-bound to say that winning in Georgia isn't always a given. Followed by a draw hosting Greece. Again, that's a pretty good result. They are, you know, by now out of contention. It was always going to be a difficult group, given that, you know, the two seeded sides, as it were, are Spain and Sweden, who are both very good sides. But, you know, if they can get third place in the group, which a win over Greece away on the final day probably would assure them of, you know, then that's still very impressive progress. For Bosnia and Herzegovina, they are surprisingly still somehow in contention, given that they, you know, just don't win games. You know, their win over Kuwait in a friendly in the middle of this little spell was their first win in about 2 years. And then went on to host Kazakhstan the following day, went 1-0 down, pulled it back to lead with 5 minutes to go, and then conceded a 95th minute goal to make it a draw. Their group games left are away to Kazakhstan, away to Ukraine, then hosting Finland and hosting Ukraine. Now, while the two worst games for them are out of the way, in so much as they don't have to play France again, you have to actually win games to qualify for tournaments. And it's really hard to see at the moment how Bosnia are actually going to win any of those games. You know, Finland and Ukraine aren't amazing sides by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, in terms of the form that the Bosnians are in right now, you really would have a hard time justifying why you would be backing them to get 3 points from either game. Finally, then that leaves us with Montenegro, who they got off to a very good start to the group and then have had a less good international break this time around. It opened up with a reasonably impressive draw against Turkey. Now, after we mentioned about last-minute goals in that Kazakhstan draw, Montenegro left it even later there with a 97th minute goal from Nisto Radunovic to actually secure themselves a point. They then were spanked 4-0 by the Netherlands, which, you know, isn't too bad. You know, at the end of the day, it's the Netherlands, and really, you know, for a side like Montenegro, their concentration should be on what was the final game of this little run, which was hosting Latvia. Now, you've got to remember that Montenegro beat Latvia 2-1 on the opening day of the group. Montenegro ended up with a 0-0 draw, 21 shots, 60-odd% possession. And it, while it's not done for them, you know, their next game is against Gibraltar, and that will be 3 points for Montenegro. No point about, no point really arguing about that. They end with away to Norway, then hosting the Netherlands and hosting Turkey as their last three games. So really, you know, you're looking at Montenegro getting two, three games left in the group, 11 points, which would put them two behind what the Dutch and Norwegians have already got in the bank. That will probably be it for them getting many points for the group. You know, you're looking at them really pulling off a shock victory against Turkey or Norway, getting results and getting up to 14, 15 points if they're looking to qualify. But I mean, even then, you know, you're really relying on the Dutch, Norwegians and the Turks all having, you know, a really poor couple of months. And that's probably a little bit too much to expect, in my estimation. Now, with international football out of the way, we'll obviously talk about what everyone likes to talk about most, I think. That would be club football. Hooray! We have four sides who have managed to get themselves into group stages, which are, of course, Mura in the Europa Conference League, Zvezda and Dinamo in the Europa League, and Partizan in the Conference League as well. Dinamo and Zvezda both were done for in the Champions League qualifying stages by Sheriff Tiraspol, the Moldovan, no, Transnistrian, I think it must be, the Transnistrian side. I think if I call them Moldovan, then I'll probably be in trouble. Yes, I mean, Mura have... focus on them, I think, a bit more than the other three sides, and purely because obviously it's a bit less expected that they're there. They have been given a group, which is Spurs, Rennes, and Vitesse Arnhem, which is probably about the three most difficult sides in the pots above them. So, you know, I think really got to hope that they're able to get a point. I think they'll be doing well if they do get a point out of those six games. You know, they are really incredibly challenging. Vitesse are a little bit behind where they were last season. It is fair to point that out, but no, I mean, that is a horrible draw for any side, much less, you know, Mura side, who are really the smallest in the competition. For Partizan in the Conference League, they have been drawn against Hent. I think the G is silent in it. The Belgian side that's spelled G-E-N-T. Flora Tallinn and Anorthosis Famagusta. Famagusta are a side who I think sort of haven't really cropped up in my imagination since the 90s, and they seem to draw Rangers all the time in Europe. You know, really that is a favourable group that Partizan should look to qualify from. You would expect Kent would win the group. Partizan giving them a challenge, but Flora Tallinn, you know, are minnows. Anorthosis Famagusta will be a decent side. You know, you rarely get a bad side from Cyprus, but you know, Partizan should have enough in hand to be getting 4 points over the two games against them. And you know, getting into the last 24, is it? I'm a little bit hazy on the exact qualification scheme of the Europa League, of the Europa Conference League, because you have so many teams who'll be dropping down and stuff into it. As for our two sides in the Europa League, Zvezda and Dinamo won't be meeting each other because they were in the same pot. So thanks, Sheriff, for ensuring that didn't happen in the Champions League playoff and doesn't happen in the Europa League as well. So starting off with Zvezda, they've been drawn against Braga, Ludogorets Razgrad, and Midtjylland. Midtjylland, having watched them against Celtic, weren't pretty good. They weren't any great shakes, but they were, you know, what you'd expect a decent-ish Europa League side to be. Ludogorets, having watched them against Mura, pretty similar. You know, they've made a few statement signings, I think, and yeah, I would expect them to be competitive. Braga, very much the same. You know, they're regulars at this stage now, and regularly competitive. I think, you know, that's four very even sides. I think Zvezda probably would be maybe the third best of those, just sort of given the form they're in at the minute. As for Dinamo, they have Genk, who knows how you meant to pronounce these Belgian names. This isn't a Belgian podcast, as you can tell. They have West Ham and Rapid Vienna, which is not the most enjoyable of groups. But again, you know, you're probably thinking Dinamo on reputation based on last year's exploits should get through it. Dinamo on form, you're maybe thinking they might end up third in the Conference League. I would expect them to be better than Rapid. I would expect them to be pretty even with Genk. And West Ham, the thing with English sides you always have to sort of bear in mind is it's always up in the air as to how seriously they actually take a competition that isn't the Champions League. If West Ham take it seriously, then of course, you know, they're going to have a good chance of winning the group. If they don't, then, you know, Dinamo will be looking at them as a source of 3 points. I think probably the actual mathematics of the group is probably going to be decided by just how seriously the Hammers want to take it, particularly given that Dinamo and West Ham actually play on the final group day. And if West Ham have taken it seriously and have qualified by then, that should be 3 points for Dinamo. We shall, of course, see. In terms of the individual leagues, because obviously we've not touched on domestic football yet, in spite of being over 20 minutes in, I don't really want to go too much over 25, so we'll quickly scoot through them. It's really been a story of champions having iffy starts to seasons, pretty much all over, really. If we start, and this, say this is going to be a really quick run through, so apologize, we'll do sort of more in-depth ones as we go, not feeling that one today. If we start off with the alphabet, we'll start off with Bosnian League. Boric had an absolutely dire start to the season. I think they went to the fifth game before they actually won. In spite of being champions, you know, they were bottom for three whole game weeks, which you don't expect of the champions, particularly when they had a reasonably okay-ish European campaign. Top at the minute, Tuzla City with Sloboda right behind them, and FK Sarajevo just in behind them. It's certainly one where the season hasn't settled as yet. I would note Sarajevo have brought in Rifet Kapic just after the end of the transfer window. He was absolutely magnificent in at Sheriff Tiraspol, that team again, last season. You know, I'm digging into his advanced stats, and they are a work of wonder. If he can just transfer that form, you know, Sarajevo will be doing very well. But certainly, you know, at the minute, Tuzla City have a game in hand and 2 points clear of Sloboda. If they can win that game in hand, you know, we're talking that 5 points already is a pretty healthy little lead. They have, some real venom and potency up front, and they have a good chance of maintaining this form, certainly through the autumn. We'll see what goes on beyond that point. Moving to the north and to Croatia at the minute. Dinamo, Rijeka, Hajduk and Osijek all on 13 points. Dinamo hadn't really put in a very good performance this season until just before the international break, when they played Osijek and, you know, really smacked them about a bit. Osijek haven't yet recaptured the form of last season. Hajduk, I think, probably feel they should be a bit better off than they are. Rijeka are overperforming at the minute. And then you have Gorica and Lokomotiva just behind them as well. Gorica, they still have Christian Lovric at the club, so they have a chance. He has any side. Lokomotiva have added to their attacking ranks as the transfer window came to a close. And look pretty decent so far. At the bottom are Fatsky Dragovoljak, who have looked absolutely dire, aside from when they beat Slavin Blipo and cost Dan Krafurich his job in the last round. That was the first time they'd looked like, you know, even a decent second league side, never mind a Pierre League side. You know, they've conceded 19 already in seven games, and you don't win many games if you're conceding three every game. I don't hold out much hope for them already. Moving southwards to Kosovo. Kosovo have only just had a couple of rounds so far, so it's very little to actually talk about, save that, you know, the usual suspects have done quite well, aside from Pristina, the reigning champions, who've only got 1 point from their two games so far. In North Macedonia, you have Skupi and Akademia Pandev, who are both at the top of the minute after five games. Skendia haven't gotten off to a great start, only 6 points from their first five, but that's sort of because they've been quite fun to watch in terms of the amount of goals that are going in at both ends. A bit of the OCR dealers, Spurs, as it were. Moving down along to Montenegro, which are a little bit further into the league. So Ceska have started off brilliantly, unbeaten so far in six games with 16 points, three clear of promoted Mornar, who, you know, have made a couple of statements in terms of how they want to carry themselves in terms of their signings. And Decic just in behind them. Budućnost at the minute off the pace with only 9 points, but you know they didn't get a, they got off to a bit of an iffy start last season as well, and then came through to win by over 20 points. So yeah, certainly don't write them off, even with a 7 point deficit to Ceska at the moment. In Serbia, it will not surprise you who's top. It's the Belgrade side. It's Partizan. TSC. Bacha Topola, they have opened their new stadium. It's a lovely, only about 4,500, but you know, really nice building or two. They opened that over the international break, so we're really looking forward to seeing that be a factor. And you know, they've come in so far in their seven games with 16 points, sitting in second just above Zvezda on goal difference. So I think certainly it would be interesting to see, you know, it is really those three sides who are already starting to pull away. You have Napredak and Voždovac and Spartak in behind them, about 4 or 5 points behind. You know, the gap's already there. Mladost, six games, six defeats. They're in trouble. Finally, we have Slovenia. Mura have gotten off to a dodgy start, only really pulling themselves into sort of form in the last couple of rounds before the international break. I think it's sort of something we've sort of seen last season with Celje as well, that the European exploits tend to re-hammer the domestic form, even if the European form is pretty decent. Alumni are bottom at the minute with only 4 points, and that's four draws, zero wins. Both Koper and Bravo at the minute are unbeaten. Really impressive to see Bravo up there. Koper, you know, I think I will just very much keep the jury out on that one, just given how they ended last season. It may be that this is just a spurt and they fall away quite rapidly. Bravo, I think, is probably a little bit more sustainable, even if they have now lost the absolutely fantastic goalkeeper Igor Vekic. Maribor and Olympia, both on 13 points, the same as Bravo. Both have had reasons to worry so far this season, and both have had reasons for you to think that, hey, it probably won't be up to the big two again this season. So thank you very much for taking the time to listen to this ad hoc one. I was due to have an episode out on Monday. I am going to cancel it and re-record it because I wasn't just not impressed with the sound quality because of the acoustics of where I recorded it. Which I should have thought about really before I did it, because it's quite a long episode as well to redo. But yes, thank you very much for listening. Do, wherever you are, enjoy your football as always. I know I will be. Thank you for listening, and I'll catch you next time.